Welcome to Job Tales, the show where we find out about different professions from the people who know. Each week, I'll speak to a new guest with an inspiring job. We talk to journalists, filmmakers, real estate agents, ballet dancers, you name it. We hear about their personal path to doing what they do, the skills that are required, and the tools they use for the job. I am Laura Leoncini, and today my guest is Stéphane Choinière, performing artist in Las Vegas. He started as a competing gymnast during college. He then was introduced to contemporary dance, and the company Antigravity in New York allowed him to refine his art and to work on many shows, and in Cirque du Soleil, he found his dream job, merging gymnastics and dance. Stéphane is also an act designer and a teacher. Stéphane Choinière, I'm so happy to have you. So many years have passed, and it's so funny. I was recently at a Cirque du Soleil, and then here we are interviewing you as a performing artist and then much more. But let me just stop there. I would like to hear all about your job from you, please. You have the floor.
Okay, Laura, it's a delight to be speaking with you here and to be a guest on your show.
Pleasure.
So to begin with, I am a performing artist. I've been working with Cirque du Soleil in Las Vegas for many years. I'm not currently with Cirque du Soleil at the moment, but I'll give you the background and how I arrived here. When I was a child, I was brought into gymnastics. So that's really the foundation of my work, or at least where I began being able to be a physical performing artist.
Yeah.
And I competed gymnastics in college on a scholarship at a very high level. I would say elite level, because one of my team members was also an Olympian and a few others were on the national team here in the U.S.
Okay.
But then after my competitive career, it seemed like a shame to throw away all those years of training and skill. Even though I had other plans as an artist, I received my Bachelor of Fine Arts in painting and drawing while I was on a scholarship for gymnastics at Temple University in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
My initial idea at that time was, well, I'm going to be a painter. I'm going to do the bohemian lifestyle and build up my work to be able to bring it around and show to galleries and hopefully become represented and do, you know, it seemed like a hard lifestyle, right? But that was the plan. In the meantime, I still needed a job to pay my bills and so on. So I was teaching gymnastics.
Okay. And
that was my first job as an adult, I should say, after having left college.
So after college, you started teaching. Did you need to do anything in order to be a teacher? Or were your years experience enough?
Yeah, there's no credits needed except, you know, your accolades as a competitive athlete and how far you went in that field as a gymnast. So that was enough to be able to get a full-time job teaching gymnastics.
Yeah, then afterwards, so you had several years of, you've done gymnastics. How many years? Was it all the college years that you were doing gymnastics?
My mother brought me in to starting my first classes when I was 10 years old.
Mm.
And I proceeded, never stopped since then, all through junior high and high school, to be able to reach a level where I could earn a scholarship in gymnastics to college. So it really helped to pay for my schooling and education.
Then what happened when you were teaching gymnastics? What was the jump to becoming an artist?
I had some other teachers working with me, one of which was also a dancer. And she was creating a piece of her own with a group. And she asked me if I would like to join the group and perform with her company. And I did, and discovered that I enjoyed it. And really, in fact, she was a contemporary dancer with some gymnastics skill, hence why she was also teaching at the same school that I was. And I was introduced to contemporary dance for the first time. I really didn't know very much about it, if anything at all. I only knew about ballet, tap, breakdance. You know, I didn't know what contemporary dance was, but she really helped open my eyes to that world that also very much enchanted me. And I realized, wow, there's no rules. You can do whatever you want in modern dance.
Yeah.
Literally anything. And I thought, well, if that's true, there's no rules, then I can use my gymnastic ability and make something of it. rather than, you know, discarding it after so many years. It seemed like such a shame. And I realized, wow, I could do a hybrid of movement and acrobatic gymnastics. Yeah. And at that time, this was in the 90s, early 90s, I didn't know that there really was very much of that out there in terms of acrobatic dance. And there wasn't yet at that time. Now it's all over the world. Yeah. And it's easy to go to a school where you can learn both simultaneously. But at that time, it really was not so well known. And I thought I was innovative in my mind. And in some ways, yes. Mm-hmm. And then I realized to be able to make a hybrid of this type of movement performance, I would have to become a better dancer. You know, training as gymnastics is entirely different than training as a dancer.
I was going to say, yeah.
That experience with my colleague opened my eyes to a whole other world. And I realized I wanted to become a better mover, a movement artist. And to do that, I had to start taking dance. So, but simultaneously to that time, the same colleague brought me to a Cirque du Soleil show. And I didn't know what Cirque du Soleil was. It's just circus. And I hadn't really been excited about circus in my life. I didn't feel like it was something I wanted to do. I thought of it in classical circus terms like Barnum and Bailey, Ringling Brothers, Barnum and Bailey. There's also the Big Apple Circus in New York that was that I had seen when I was young. But it didn't really intrigue me until I saw Cirque du Soleil.
Right.
That just blew my mind.
Yeah, it's mind-blowing.
Yeah, so and it was more theatrical than I expected. I didn't know it could touch me so deeply. Emotionally, it's the theater of it. You know, it's really Cirque du Soleil brought to the world what is called nouveau cirque in the French phrase, but it's new circus.
Right.
And what was new about it was really there's no animals, and it really combined theater, dance, and circus all in one. And it just had so much more potential. Obviously, it really touched me deeply, and I thought, that's what I want to do. And so that combined with my new open eyes in terms of the world of contemporary dance, I realized, wow, there's this beautiful path I could go down. And that's really what initiated all of it. And from there, there are many stories I could tell along the way.
Yeah. I want to know the stories that make it. Yeah, where your life really took a turn, and then also, you know, from the moment that you knew that what you wanted to do, what did you do? Like, did you ask to be part of the Cirque du Soleil? Did you apply, or did you start taking other classes? How did your life go from there?
Well, I decided to become. I needed to become a better dancer first. I thought that, well, maybe I could join Cirque with what I have. And it's true that I possibly could have at that time. But it's not like Cirque was doing formal auditions back then. It was 1991. And there were none that I was aware of. And so, so it seemed obvious to me that I would just become a better dancer and I would go down that route. And I ended up deciding I would move to New York City to do so.
Okay.
I discovered a company in New York City that was called Anti-Gravity, and it was all former gymnasts who had become dancers, and some dancers that had some gymnastic ability. So I found a niche for myself, and this company really took me in and fostered me and helped me develop into a performer. Really, if there's any other, there's really probably no other company or source that had influenced or helped me along this path more than Anti-Gravity and the founder of that company, Christopher Harrison, who gave me so many opportunities, so many diverse opportunities to grow and develop as a performer, doing a lot of corporate jobs, a lot of corporate entertainment, but much more diverse than that. I mean, we did so many things, including their own Anti-Gravity's own productions. But that's where I cut my teeth on the entertainment world, was in New York City, and so much of the work with Anti-Gravity.
Amazing. And that made you a better dancer. So you had the gymnastics part of it and now the dance part.
Yes. In fact, I was still simultaneously taking a lot of dance classes to improve myself. And I had the opportunity to do that with the Alvin Ailey Company, or rather the Ailey School, I should say, where I was able to teach the junior division program there, gymnastics.
Okay.
So I found another gymnastics teaching job, which enabled me also to take my dance classes in the same school.
Okay, I was going to say, because in the meantime, you still need to pay your bills, right? And while you're improving your own style and technique.
Well, fortunately, the doors opened wide for me once I arrived in New York City, and anti-gravity began providing me with enough work that I didn't have to teach full time.
Okay.
I still did part-time teaching, but eventually my career turned into full-time performing.
And this is what you were doing when we met in Singapore many, many years ago. Back then you were at the Resorts World, you were telling me.
That was at a change in my life. It was after I had reached the mountain, so to speak, the peak of my career. I had already had achieved my dream job.
Wow. And at Cirque du Soleil.
Yes. And then shortly after that, I left the company and began to do a diverse array of different jobs within entertainment. And in Singapore, when you met me, I'd been hired to be the assistant of the acrobatic choreographer. And I also helped create one of the acts in that show.
Mm.
And after the show was launched, the creative team left Singapore and asked me to stay on board as a resident director until they could find a permanent resident director. So that was the time that we met. I was in that little window of time that I was just being the interim resident director before I came back to the U.S.
I see. Okay. So by then you had your dream job, and you said that you left the company. Why did you leave the company? Cirque du Soleil, being, you know, your dream job, did you have enough experience? You wanted to find something new, or what was the reason?
Well, my work with Cirque du Soleil was doing a duo with a female partner.
Yeah. Okay.
And it was an acrobatic dance. And she, at that time, had become pregnant with her first child and decided that she was moving on, which
I see.
Consequently, I had to go as well. And I hadn't found a replacement partner that was appropriate or that could stick around with me. So I had to find some other work for a period of time. And it was a difficult time, but it caused me to diversify a little bit more in my field. So in addition to performing, I started teaching, coaching, directing, choreographing. And so I had a mishmash of different jobs. And that's at the window of time that you and I met in Singapore, whereas I was diversifying myself at that time.
Yeah. It was 2012. Yeah, I remember that you did mention that also about the duo and about, changing. You stayed maybe a couple of years in Singapore, and then you returned back to the U.S.
Yeah, I stayed almost a year in Singapore.
Almost a year? Okay.
And when I came back to the U.S., I eventually found a partner to begin my performing work again.
Okay. Always at Cirque?
Not initially. I ended up doing a lot of different types of jobs and festivals and private parties and corporate work. It's just, it's what you do as a freelance artist, is that you would attempt to line up these jobs one after another. And so that's what I did. Sometimes not so successfully, because the jobs, the entertainment world, the year ebbs and flows, and it's difficult to keep the consistency in that. That is what I found a bit frustrating about being a freelance independent artist. It can be a bit shocking. When I was in New York City, I had the privilege of anti-gravity really providing me with so many job opportunities. I didn't really have to hustle as an independent artist to go seek work on a regular basis. And then from anti-gravity, I went directly into Cirque du Soleil. So again, I had the privilege of being taken care of, if you will, by a large company. So I hadn't had the experience of being on my own as an independent freelance artist until after Cirque, and that was a bit of a shock.
And because there were no agencies or something similar to anti-gravity that could line up jobs for you, for example?
Not in the role that anti-gravity played for me in New York City. It's true. I didn't have that.
Okay.
That cushion, there was a bit of a safety net, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. No, I wonder if it's because, when you're an artist, you're creative and you don't necessarily want to think of the business side of things, but you must as well in order to, you know, to have your income and so forth. So I wonder if that could be a hindrance to some artists that want to, you know, follow your lead and have a career like you did. Is this something that an artist needs to take into account when starting a career as a performing artist?
Yeah, you build your network. And regardless of whether you're taken in by a company and all your needs are supplied, or right. whether you're an independent artist and you're trying to line up your gigs one after another, you're still reliant upon your network of people that you know in your industry. Mm-hmm. These days, you have social media that helps a whole lot with that.
Really?
Mm-hmm. When I began, there was no such thing. So we had a lot more face-to-face networking.
Yeah. And today, like, does, you know, being on Instagram or Facebook, does it help?
It's an absolute necessity.
Ah, okay.
Yes. I would say that I get a lot of my work through my network on social medias.
Amazing. Okay. What social media would you say are the most, you know, favorite ones for your job?
Facebook and Instagram are the two primary ones.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm also, there's a social media platform called Circus Talk.
Oh, okay.
CircusTalk.com. And that's become a very important one as well. And that they are still in development phase and growing, but they're becoming yeah. more and more important. So that's playing a bigger role as well with alongside Facebook and Instagram. I use Circus Talk. Hmm. LinkedIn, occasionally I use that one. But
okay. More for like, yeah, jobs from, you know, maybe corporate gigs.
Yeah, it's strange. Sometimes I get interesting inquiries through LinkedIn, but yeah. most of my work actually comes through people I know already.
Yeah, that always works best, eh?
Yeah, right.
So, of course, then you started in the 90s, so that also back then, I don't know, maybe there was, I wonder if there was less competition, you know, now. I mean, there's not maybe thousands of companies or thousands of situations such as you can find at Cirque du Soleil. If you could talk to a young crowd listening today, what would be your advice as to where to start?
Well, you have to hone your skill, first of all. And get opportunities to perform. And I would say get into a showcase or two, a festival, or take opportunities where you can perform to start cutting your teeth on the stage and getting to know okay. Getting to feel the interaction with an audience.
Mm-hmm.
But your job potential is going to be hinged upon your abilities and skills that you've developed along the way. So you never stop developing those, even now for me.
Right.
At, I would say, a more senior age, I still look to improve myself and my skills.
Right. And that's actually brings me to an important question, because, you know, there are some jobs like yours, when it's physical, where it has an end date, right? Like, I don't know, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but when you're 70 or, you know, beyond 60, maybe.
It could be.
It could be.
I haven't found that yet.
Okay.
I'm pushing the limits myself. I'm actually 55 this year and still going wow. as a performing artist.
Amazing.
And diversifying myself in other areas simultaneously, because I know that eventually the performing aspect will become less and less important.
Right.
But I haven't found the end date for me yet. Okay. It comes at different times for different people, of course.
For everyone. Mm-hmm.
And your passion.
Yes. Okay. Your drive and passion and physical.
And how long your body can take it.
Can take it. Know. Yeah. Yeah.
Fortunately, I've taken very good care of my body and continue to do so, because I feel like it's not only a priority for my work, but I want to continue doing it. Right now, I still want to stay on stage as long as I can, as long as people will have me.
You love that. I mean, that's your passion, right?
Yeah.
Performing. How do you take care of yourself, of your body? Do you, you know, something aside, I mean, you know, I'm thinking of the way you nourish yourself, the way you nourish your mind. Is this some specific things that maybe could be helpful for others to know?
Well, I keep a consistency of my physical exercise, my workouts. This is non-negotiable.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of my weekly routine, and I try to keep a regimen of every other day. But sometimes I stack it and I go day after day. It depends on if I'm traveling or if things are going to interrupt my regular routine, that I'll make sure that I get in a couple days in a row before I travel. But generally, if I'm staying home, I want to work out every other day. So I have a day of rest and a workout, another day of rest and a workout, and I keep going in that pattern.
Okay.
So yeah, that's non-negotiable. And then, of course, I also take care of my nutrition in countless ways, Laura. I do so much research into nutrition and health and so on. I'm always trying to stay on top of that. That field itself is a whole... Well, you can go down so many different rabbit holes.
Yeah.
And I do. I'm a researcher. I love to do that. And I experiment on myself with various different nutritional protocols and cleansings or various healing devices and so on. So, yeah, I've tried so many different things. And
so many things.
What's exciting is that field is growing at an exponential rate right now, too. So there's so many new technologies, new nutritional protocols that... It takes a lot of time to continue to stay on top of all that stuff, but it's a priority, so I do.
You were talking about diversifying, you know, in light of, you know, an older age where maybe your body will not follow as much as you would like. What is the diversification about?
Well, there's a piece of the puzzle I haven't filled in yet, which will help elucidate that point. I'm actually also a fine artist. So I went to school to receive my BFA in painting and drawing.
Right.
And my gymnastics scholarship helped to fund my way through school. Oh, well, I already told you that about being a painter. So
yeah. doing that? Are you practicing that?
Well, that was put on the back burner for many, many years. And I'm realizing now that I really want to bring my artistic life back to the front, or at least side by side with what I'm doing. So I feel like I have an interesting take on performing arts, which in terms of being able to make a hybrid now, a different type of hybrid of fine arts with performing arts. And so I'm exploring all the different ways that that can be done. And so in terms of diversifying, to answer your question, I am taking some of the experiences that I've been doing as a fine artist, not so much as a creator of fine arts, but as a model for a fine artist in the past 20 years now, as a model for photographers, as a model for sculptors, and realizing that there are ways that we could possibly display this type of work on a stage or in a museum type of setting that's not so traditional, shall we say.
Yeah.
And while I'm thinking of all that, I'm thinking, well, why don't I become the creator again? Let's start making paintings, start making photos, start making sculptures. So, yeah.
There is no end.
There's
to
no
your
end.
Creative juices.
True, there. And also in terms of being on the creative side of performances and shows, I just finished coming back from Merida Festival in Mexico, where I was asked to direct a show for that festival. It was so satisfying for me that I know that I want to continue doing this as well. So directing is going to be
a major
another element. Yeah, another piece of that puzzle.
Oh, the puzzle. And then lastly, for our listeners, is there something you want to share from what you've learned that they could benefit from? You know, had you known back then when you started, is this one thing that you would like to give?
Had I known back then when I started? Well, I would say relationships. Relationships with the people that you work with are so important. But that would be true in any field. But to be specific about my field, as a creative artist, I'm in the business of discovery. And so that takes a whole new set of skills. If you're going to create, you have to try to discover. And that's going into the unknown. It's like, well, you know, when you go to art school or any type of school, you end up having to copy the masters to learn how they did things. And that just develops your skill.
Yeah.
But then at some point, you need to be the creator yourself. You need to make the thing which is unique. And that's the job that we have as creative artists, is we're in the business of discovery. And so there's an Italian proverb that I like, which says, "Substance is not enough. Accident is also required." So we spend so much time, just to elucidate on that quote, we spend so much time building our substance, building our skill, building our ability. But then because our job is in the field of discovery to be create, then we need to have accidents. We need to do things that are unexpected.
That's
we
true.
We can't analyze and create at the same time. You have to explore and fall down and go in the unexpected places. And those discoveries come as gifts.
That's awesome. No, thank you. That's a precious, precious advice. And on that note, I want to end here. I want to thank you, and I wish you plenty of more years of performance in front of an audience.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Laura. I really appreciate you.
That was Stéphane Chouanier, performing artist in Las Vegas. If you'd like to listen to this podcast again or more from the JobTales series, go to worldradio.ch/JobTales or search JobTales wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Laura Lungini, and I'll be back next week for another episode of JobTales with a brand new guest, same time next week on WRS.